Chères auditrices et chers auditeurs, bonsoir depuis le festival Jazz 11 Plus de Lausanne. Aujourd'hui débute la 36e édition de ce rendez-vous incontournable de la région. Le premier concert aura lieu ce soir 31 octobre à 20h au théâtre de l'Octogone à Puyi, avec le légendaire saxophoniste Joshua Redman, accompagné pour la première fois par la chanteuse Gabrielle Cavassa et un trio d'exception avec Paul Cornish au piano, Philippe Norris à la basse, Nadir Ebo à la batterie. On est allé rencontrer Joshua Redman avant son concert et ce qui suit est l'interview en anglais que le micro de la radio La Fabrique a enregistré pour vous. Hello Joshua, nice to finally meet you. How are you?
I'm doing well, nice to meet you as well, and very happy to be back here in Lausanne.
Exactly.
I've been here
it's
many
not
times,
first time,
not,
right?
not the first time. Yeah. I lost count, but I mean, I think I've been here at least four times before.
I think so. Seeing you, and I think Switzerland is very happy to have you back.
Yes, really. It's one of the great festivals in Europe,
it really is, isn't it? I would like to start with the band you're touring at the moment. So as I mentioned before, we had Gabrielle Cavassa, mm-hmm. Paul Cornish, Philippe Norris and Nadir Ebo. Mm-hmm. You've been in countless bands, both with regular friends like Brad Meldau, Brian Blade, Gregory Hutchison, but also new colleagues. Could you run us through your approach when you choose your fellow tour companions?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I have much of an approach or much of a system. I mean, my whole life, as a musician, and especially as a professional musician, I've always just tried to surround myself with the best musicians in the world, and really to basically surround myself with musicians that are much better than I am. That's how I've learned. That's how I've grown. And that's always been the case. I do feel like I am only as good a musician as the company that I keep. You know, I feel like I don't have anything inside of me that's that special, but what I have is maybe a capacity to absorb what other people are giving me and what's inside of them and somehow rise to the occasion.
So can we say that when you look for a new project or a new band, you're really looking for the companionship that you are, let's say the fellowship of the ring?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I don't know about the Lord of the Rings analogy.
It's all magic.
Yeah. Is Gollum in there somewhere? I don't know. But yes, I mean, absolutely, companionship, fellowship, community, conversation. I mean, I think all music, unless you're playing solo, is a social act. But jazz maybe more than any, because so much of jazz is improvisation. So it's not about what you have rehearsed or what you've practiced, or you don't even necessarily have a clear idea. You don't know what's going to happen, you know, but you have to be there in the moment to absorb and to have a conversation with other musicians that you're playing with.
Absolutely. And this time is the first time you have vocal parts.
It is.
So in this album.
It is, yeah.
We have it's the latest album, Where Are We, released on the 15th of September 2023 with the Blue Note Records. It is said to be a celebration and a critique of the US society, which each piece represents one town in the US, from Baltimore to San Francisco and Minneapolis to Alabama. In the 90s, you graduated actually from Harvard College in social studies. So is this album a sort of a wink at your younger self when you had to choose between jazz and law?
No, definitely not. I mean, I don't mind winking at my younger self. I mean, I'd love to be my younger self, but you know, it doesn't work like that. Can I marry my younger self and then just be make my younger self better? No. Obviously, there is an inescapable concept at work here in this album. I'm not the sort of musician who's been very comfortable with concept or concept records. I haven't really made many, if any, of them. And I tend to be highly suspicious, deeply suspicious of them, especially when they're my own concepts, you know. But in this case, obviously, yes, I mean, there's an obvious concept, which is that every song on the record, almost every song, is about a place in the United States. And yes, we are trying to represent through these different songs, different aspects of the American experience, the American dream, the American reality, how those converge and how those diverge, you know, the successes and the the ideals, but also the problems and the failures. But it's not, I mean, ultimately it's about the music. You know, and each song, yes, each song can fit into a larger narrative, but ultimately I feel like all that, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's like if a song like, you know, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, that should stand on its own, you know? A song like Streets of Philadelphia, each song should be able to exist on its own, independent of the concept. And ultimately, I just want people to feel something.
Absolutely, you know? And that's what music is about.
Yes, yeah, and whatever they feel is valid, yeah.
When were the pieces written?
None of them are really original compositions. There's only one song that is an original composition, which is After Minneapolis. So yes, Kurt Rosenwinkel is on the album, Joel Ross is on the album, Nicholas Payton is on the album, they're all as special guests. Peter Bernstein is on the album. But it was exciting. I mean, you know, I put together this dream band of Aaron Parks and Joe Sanders and Brian Blade and Gabriel Cavassa, and we were just lucky to be able to be in New Orleans to record over a period of four days. And we were able to bring in special guests to play on songs that represented the cities that they're from. So Joel Ross is from Chicago, he plays on Chicago Blues. Peter Bernstein's from New York City, he plays on Manhattan, et cetera, et cetera.
For this setting, you have you yourself on the saxophone, you have piano, you have bass, you have drums, and then also the voice of Gabriel Cavassa. In your professional career, I saw that you had different setups, different type of bands. Is there another ensemble that you would like to try in the future?
I mean, I'm sure the answer is yes, but I don't know what that is. You know, this is a question that I've been asked since I started, is like, what else would you like to do, you know? And I mean, it's like everything, but also nothing, because like, I really try to stay as focused as I can, especially like if I'm in the middle of a tour with a band, I try to be present in the moment, you know? So it's hard for me to think about, what do I want to do next? And if I spend too much time thinking about what do I want to do next, then I'm not actually living and experiencing the music of the moment.
Yeah, you end up like chasing next step.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, you know, I've been doing this for a while, I guess. I mean, now it's going on 35 years, you know? You know, if you look at the sorts of groups that I've been a part of and that I've put together as a leader, I mean, they tend to be small groups, you know, and oftentimes quartets or trios or quintets, you know? So I guess that's my preferred mode of musical operation within jazz, you know? So I'll probably continue to do a lot of that. But in this case, it's a jazz quartet, saxophone, piano, bass, and drums, but also with a vocalist. And that changes things dramatically because, I mean, I'm used to being the lead melodic voice, you know? As a saxophonist in an instrumental jazz context, I'm playing the melody, I'm taking the solos, you know, I am stating the main melodic material. And this is a completely different situation because now Gabrielle is doing that, so it kind of frees me to explore other,
In this project, you are the leader, but also, let's say, the side
accompanist,
man,
right?
So how do you harmonize that when you're doing the live concert?
Yeah, well, it's a work in progress, you know, I mean, it's something that, although I have had played with singers, you know, at different times before, this is the first time that I've ever done, you know, a full record like that, and the first time I've ever done tours where night after night I'm playing with the vocalist. So I'm learning, you know, but it's exciting. It's exciting. I mean, I feel like in a way, it's somewhat paradoxical, but I feel like in a way, now that I'm not the main center of melodic attention, in a way I feel like my playing has gotten even more melodic and lyrical.
And to be honest, if you listen to the album, Where Are We? It's definitely that's what it is.
So I guess I should have been playing with a vocalist since.
No shouldn't.
Right. No.
It's always difficult to ask this to an artist because it's like asking a parent which one is your favorite child. But among all the tunes from the album that I assume you will play tonight, which one are you really looking forward to play the most and why?
Ooh, that's a tough question on a number of levels because, well, I mean, it's hard to choose. And also, what I choose as my favorite one night could be completely different than another night. The other reason why it's hard is because I don't know which we're going to play tonight. So, it's just so hard to make this choice. I think there are some songs that were unusual choices and that perhaps I didn't expect to be as kind of musically rewarding and interesting and perhaps successful as they were. I think Streets of Philadelphia is a good example of that because, I mean, if you had told me, you know, 20 years ago, you're going to record a cover of a Bruce Springsteen song. I mean, I've always respected Bruce Springsteen, but I never thought that I would be able to find a way in as a jazz musician. And I think that, you know, that's a song that we play almost every night, and it always feels great. I mean, Gabrielle really took ownership of that song. I feel like it respects the original sentiment and the original version, but, you know, she puts so much of her own self and soul in there, and the way in which we've arranged it, it's just, that's one that I'm kind of
in a way with. I think with this album, given that also you have the voice of Gabrielle, you're kind of bridging really from the world, the universe of the jazz standards that we always listen to some sort of more, if I'm the term, a bit more pop. So
right.
You also have influences, some of the influences that you mentioned, apart from the jazz legends, you also have the Temptation, you have the Beatles, and
right.
So on.
Yeah.
So it's nice that with this album, I think you kind of bridge the two worlds, even if they're not they
sure.
Not be separate,
yes,
right?
Yeah. I mean, we do have, you know, like Manhattan, although that's an instrumental song, that's a classic jazz standard. Stars Fell on Alabama, a classic jazz standard, although we do it differently, like it's just a duo between Gabrielle and myself. But yes, I mean, looking outside of kind of just the classic American songbook has always been, you know, the classic jazz standards. I've always done that as a jazz musician. You know, I've covered Beatles tunes before, I've covered Prince tunes, Stevie Wonder. So, you know, that's nothing new. But, I mean, having a vocalist and having such a deep and expressive and dynamic vocalist, in a way, it opens doors that weren't open before, like to a song like Streets of Philadelphia, for example, or to a song like By the Time I Get to Phoenix, you know, that's not a jazz standard at all, you know, and that's one that I can't imagine ever having done or ever doing without a vocalist, you know, because it's so much about the lyric and the story she's telling.
I'm always interested by the perspective of the artist about their live concert and their live performance. What would you consider a good concert?
It's a great question. I don't know if
because
I've ever been asked that before.
We always ask you, what you're going to do, what you're going to dance. Like, no, how do you feel when you're up there? Because we are not up there.
Yeah,
and I think it's really difficult.
It's a really great question because I want to feel good. I want to feel good when I'm playing. I usually feel good when I'm playing, even if I don't feel good about the way I'm playing, you know, music is one of places where I can be the best human being I can be. It's one of the places where I'm the most relaxed and kind of just in the moment and social and expressive. I want to feel good when I'm playing. I want to feel like we're playing well. I want to feel like we are serving the songs and expressing what they have, but we're improvising, so I want to feel like we're discovering. I want to feel like I'm riding the crest of a wave, you know, like surfing, you know, I know I'm not a surfer, but that combination between the balance between really being centered and relaxed and clear in our intent and our delivery of whatever the story is and whatever the message is, but also that feeling of being on the edge, not knowing what's going to happen, and embracing the surprise, and even like reveling in the mistakes and the accident. That's I think the ideal, but there's no perfect balance. Yeah.
Exactly. And I really think it's like when we say that jazz is really, especially a jazz concert, is really a conversation between the musician on stage. I guess what you're meaning by you want to feel good and feel good with your colleagues around you.
Yeah.
It's really when, for example, you have a very great conversation with somebody you just met.
Yes.
And then it feels smooth but also new at the same time. And it's a thing probably.
I think I want to feel authentic, if that means something.
Yes.
Like I want to feel like an authentic to the moment with these musicians, with this audience in this space. I want to feel like what we're doing is real and authentic and connected to this temporal, physical moment.
You're a tenor saxophonist, but you also play soprano sax and alto sax. Could you tell us a bit more about the instruments that you own? For instance, how many?
Huh.
Who manufactures them? And also, what are the special features that make you say this is a very good sax that I have?
That's a good question. Okay, so I don't know exactly how many I own. Probably more than I should, but not, but less than you might think. I'm not, I play the tenor saxophone is my main instrument, so I own the most of tenor saxophones. How many? Maybe I have five of them. Maybe six.
And when you tour, you tour with that.
Oh, just one. Just one. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I bring the soprano, but only if I'm also playing soprano. So basically, all the saxophones I play are vintage Selmer saxophones. I started on a Selmer Mark VI, and then I switched to Selmer's what they call super actions or super balanced actions, and recently I've gone back to the Mark VI. But these are all saxophones that were made, let's say, between 1930 and 1960 or something like that. And same with soprano, although soprano I also sometimes play a Yamaha that was made in, I guess, the 80s or something like that.
With the vintage, I guess you're trying to get a sort of different sound.
I mean, I don't feel like, I'm not trying to, it's true that of course, growing up, coming up in the music and still, so many of my heroes are from not this time. So many are also from this time. But I grew up listening to the sound of the saxophone being played on these what are now vintage saxophones. But it's not like I'm trying to play a vintage saxophone because I want to sound like I come from another time. I would love to find newly made saxophone that I could really love to play. There are some great, great new instruments out there, and there are many great players who are playing them. But just for me, and I'm not a mystical person with this kind of stuff, so it's not like I believe, there's like ghosts and energy in the instrument.
Exactly.
But I just have yet to find a newer made saxophone that has depth of sound,
right.
And there's a certain kind of flexibility, but also focus of the sound that these old Selmers have, the vintage Selmers. So
yeah, I think with when I meant a different sound is because I guess the material when there's a lived longer than just a newly made.
I think that's it's a claim that may or may not be backed by the physical science, but it is true that the metal comes from a different time but I think what it is also one thing is that back then. Every aspect of the saxophone was like hand put together. And so I think what happens is that the range with older saxophones, you can play, two that are made like right next to each other, like, very close in serial number, and they can feel and play completely differently. I think that's not true as much with newer saxophones. So it's not that the older saxophones maybe are better, like there's a lot of older saxophones that aren't good. But the ones that are really special are really special.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I think I went over time.
Okay.
And I think you need your well-deserved rest. So thank you again so very much.
Thank
Joshua
you.
Joshua Redman.
My pleasure.
Very looking to hear you tonight.
Okay.
At the Théâtre de l'Autogone à Fuzy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very
okay.
much. We'll be right back.